Now live from EverBank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and David Garrard.
All right, got the gang all here today. David Garrard on a midweek, a little Wednesday action with Dave. We decided we're going to mix it up, Dave, and maybe mixing up the routine will deliver us a little road victory this week for the Jacksonville Jaguars. First of all, how you doing? Everything good?
Doing great.
Other than the outcome.
My Pirates won, so.
Well, there's
we
that.
We beat Virginia Tech, so I'm.
Well, who doesn't beat Virginia Tech,
I'm still going to take it.
You know, I guess Ohio State last year was the case, but.
That was a heck of an out-of-conference schedule you guys played this
seriously,
year.
Seriously, right?
Hey, I love it. To be the best, you got to beat the best.
Now that he's gone. Now that beer truck's gone.
A couple
gone.
Of them.
we don't need to rehash too many of the particulars, but. From a player's perspective, when you have a game like that, let me ask you this. What's the worst defeat you remember being a part of as a pro? Like, whether it was the worst score or not, just the worst feeling defeat where you felt like, man, we just couldn't hang with this team today.
Well, let's see. Let's look back.
I know you try to block those out. Which one?
There's been some where I felt like it was more my fault with turnovers, those kind of things, where they really didn't do much other than, you know, the turnovers that I had. I honestly go back to that Seattle game. I think that was one of the toughest games.
That's a good call.
It was just one of the toughest games because it didn't seem like we could get much done. The crowd noise, the way they were playing on defense, the way they were playing on offense, it really felt like it was an uphill battle all day. I think that, you know, the East Coast, West Coast thing does have an effect on you, but it really has an effect on you when the team is just that much better.
That was a tremendous, only time I've ever been to a game there, that was a tremendous home field environment.
It was, and I remember getting there Saturday afternoon, we walked the field, and I kept thinking, how is this stadium going to be that loud? I mean, it's an outdoor stadium.
Right.
We've been indoors.
And one end is wide open.
Yeah.
What a beautiful scenic view.
It is
too.
A really pretty stadium, but we've been inside. At Indy, we've been in stadiums that are enclosed, and so I just kept thinking it's not going to be that loud. And then you get out there, and you can't. When you say you can't hear yourself think, you really can't hear yourself think, and you have to really be ready for it. You know, you have to understand what you're getting yourself into. And I think probably we didn't understand that it was going to be extremely loud. And it's funny. I was talking to Zach Miller, tight end that used to play here, and he was telling the same story to his teammates in Chicago because they just played Seattle last week. I've told the same story to a bunch of people. I've even told it to the guys on the CBS 47 show that we do. And just saying that I was trying to tell him a route. I was trying to give him some information. I was screaming it. I said, come here. I put my face mask in his ear hole and was screaming it, and he still only heard a couple of the words that I was telling him. Like, it was that loud. I could not do anything to get him to understand what I was trying to tell him.
Wow.
And he was telling the same story to his teammates because they had never played in Seattle, and so he was trying to get them ready for how loud it really was.
So you come off a performance like that, or a lack of performance, or you feel terrible. The whole team feels terrible. You know, you played probably about as badly as you can play. The other team whipped you in every phase of the game. What do you do that? I mean, I know they have Tell the Truth Monday around here. You look and you see the mistakes, but it seems like the whole game is a giant mistake. Right? There's not a whole lot that you can point to and say, this was great, that was great. So how quickly, I mean, do you want to just bury the tape? I mean, what are you looking to do in a situation like that?
Sometimes your coach might say that. He might say, we're just moving on from this. We're not even going to go back and look at this as a team. We're moving on. There's nothing to look at. But as a quarterback, you always got to go back and look at things. You always got to go back and see what you did right, what you did wrong. You want to see, the error that you made on that interception, you know, right before the half. You want to see on some of those third downs why you didn't get completions. You know, could you have moved in the pocket a little bit better? Could you have felt the rush come in and then gotten the ball out a little quicker to somebody to help them get the yards for the first down? So you got to look at it still as a quarterback because you can't just put it out your head. Now, once you look at it, you take some of the corrections and then you move on. And the best thing that I would always say to myself to do in those kind of situations is, all right, I've got a new game coming up. I can go out here, ball out, do my job, get everything done, win, and everybody has forgotten about that game last week. You know, it's a win cures all. And I always wanted to have that bounce back game because you're going to have tough games. You're going to have bad games. How do you come out the next week and perform to give your team a chance to win?
That's the big question. Blake Bortles did well coming back in week two after not a great performance. This was a stinker for a lot of guys. We'll see how they bounce back in week
four. Do you remember who you played after Seattle? 41-0. You remember the next week?
I do. Don't think I want to say.
Who?
You beat St. Louis 23-20.
Okay.
Here at the stadium.
But I know
week.
We went back to San Fran. I knew that was real soon after, and I was like, I don't know if we...
Not the best.
Yeah.
No, San Fran was like 5 or 6 weeks later.
Oh, was it?
Just, that
it felt
great
so
chilling.
Close
But you did
one.
Then. You came back, and you...
And that was the thing. And in that game, I remember it was a back-and-forth game. It was here at the stadium, and I wanted to, you know, for myself, go out and show that, you know, we can bounce back from games. And that one came down to the wire. I remember throwing an interception to their defensive end on a little wide receiver screen, and he ran it back, tried to score, and I tackled him at, like, the 2-yard line. I'm not sure if they punched it in or not. They probably did. But that was late in the game, and so this was another opportunity that I had to – show that I could go drive down at the end of the game and win the ball game, and we did. And so it was, you know, you're always trying to do better when you have made a mistake, when you have had a bad game. As long as you have more time on the clock, as long as you have another game left, you're always trying to make the ship right, and this is an opportunity for these guys to do it.
All right, we'll find out if they're able to bounce back. We'll look ahead to Indianapolis. Certainly, you've played there a bunch of times. We'll get your perspective on that. John Osier will stop by today. We'll get the latest on your Jacksonville Jaguars back on the practice field today after their off day yesterday. Our fan feedback spotlight question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Through 3 weeks, asking for a two-part answer here. Which Jaguar player has been the most disappointing? Who has come up short of your expectations the most? But also, who has most pleasantly surprised you? Who has exceeded your expectations so far in the early part of the season? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at DavidGerard9. Phone lines open to you all day at 641-1010. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Wednesday's brought to you by Metro Rooter. It's Jaguars Today. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
So the New York Jets, with their second of 3 fourth-round selections, Coach Shaw, they just went into the Pac-12 and chose Shaq Evans of UCLA. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Shaq Evans, the kid ran a 4.40, low 4.4. You don't always see that on film, which is probably one of the reasons why he slid a little bit. But this is a guy you love to take and train. He's got some natural ability. He's got some quickness. This sucker can make some tough catches now. You get him in tight spaces. The quarterback trusted him, put the ball up. The guy took the ball away from people. He was good after the catch. I wouldn't say great after catch, but good after the catch. You know, this is a good guy. The receiver coach will say, you know, give me this guy late in the draft and give me a year with him. Let me work on some routes with him. Let's put in some good positions. He'll help us on special teams. But doggone it, this guy's got good size. He can make tough catches, and he can run.
You know, I talked with Jerry Sullivan, the wide receivers coach at Jacksonville, and DJ just mentioned Jacksonville coached in the Senior Bowl. I asked him about guys he liked, and Shaq Evans was the first name that he mentioned. So you're talking about getting him with a wide receiver coach, spending some time. Shaq Evans, 213 pounds, a little more durability to work inside the middle part of the field to catch the football and make plays.
All right, there you go. Some of the scouting reports on Shaq Evans. You may have heard or may not have heard. The Jags picked him up yesterday off the street, as the phrase goes, a street free agent. He was a draft pick of the Jets in the fourth round last year, as a matter of fact, and went on IR with a shoulder injury, was there in New York in the offseason. They actually have some young guys, a Nunwa and a Wosu up there in New York who they like. So it was, you know, they've got Decker, they brought in Brandon Marshall. So it's not that bad of a wide receiver core. Jeremy Curley's still there. So he was on the outs, and as you heard there, I think that was Charles Davis. What exactly were we listening to there, Tyler?
That was the 2014 draft video. It was Stanford head coach David Shaw and our guy Charles Davis on the NFL Network.
Gotcha. All right, gotcha. And he obviously, you hear him saying that Jerry Sullivan liked working with Shaq Evans and he stood out to him. So
yep.
you know, look, I'm not saying he's revolutionizing the 53-man roster. In fact, on the practice squad.
But the way things have been going, who knows? Practice squad, you don't know. You don't know if you're going to be active this week or not.
Keep your phone handy because you may get called up. 6'1", 203, so decent size. We'll see, you know. But that's at least, you know, Tyler had the foresight to go look for the scouting report, seeing what they're saying. It was interesting to hear that Jerry Sullivan did like him last year a little bit. Dave, you've seen what's going on with Indianapolis, right? Hasn't been pretty. Here's Andrew Luck, who in his first 3 years in the league has led the Colts to 11 wins, 11 wins, 11 wins every single year. Now, last year they started 0-2. And I don't know if you recall, but in week three, face the Jags, threw four touchdown passes, kind of got things turned around and moving in the right direction. Obviously, they went on to win, you know, 10 more games after that point. Is this team just misfiring on a few things right now, or are they in more serious trouble as the record might indicate right now?
You know, looking at Andrew Luck, he is the biggest reason why they are struggling right now, and it's not because he just has pressure in his face, that kind of stuff, which he definitely does. He's still making some bad decisions. He's making some bad throws. He's making some bad reads, and I mean, he had one in particular last week where he rolled out, nobody in front of him, had a guy downfield, but he was covered by four guys. I mean, that's not a that's a play that, you know, you're third string guy that just came off the street, he shouldn't be making, you know, so let alone Andrew Luck. And so I'm not sure what's going through his head, but he has come out the gates really struggling. They found something in the second half last week to be able to, you know, come away with that win just barely.
You know, they finally found a couple Marcus Mariota turnovers. The defense helped set him up. And had Mariota not turned it over, and he's been fairly efficient with the ball so far, they're probably 0-3.
Exactly. Even with the turnovers, they still were right there to be able to at least tie it up at the end. And
well, I mean, Tennessee went out and put 33 points up on the board, and they're throwing to tie it on a two-point conversion play. So they scored plenty. I mean, Indy's defense is not that ferocious. The Jets put up 31 points on them. The Jets are not a super explosive offense. They have a few nice pieces there.
Yeah, they're definitely vulnerable. Just looking at the game, it looks like if you just keep blitzing Andrew Luck and just keep him rattled, he's going to make turnovers, and that hasn't been the case the last few years, but for some reason this year it is the case. So please watch the film and design some of the same blitzes on.
Well, that's the question. Will the Jags blitz? I mean, you're saying, you know, you need to send some extra pressure, and the pressure has been impacting him. The Jags didn't feel that was the way to attack Tom Brady. Obviously, they laid off.
That's a little different, yeah.
True. I understand that, that it's different between these guys, but do you think the Jags, from what you see, are going to go what would be kind of against form? I mean, Gus Bradley was asked to describe the defensive philosophy of this football team the other day, and he's done it before, but basically they're a team that wants to play, you know, tough man-to-man on the outside, really really challenge wide receivers and get after you with four, and he said sometimes five guys coming. You know, they'll reach a point clearly in New England where I would have said, we're getting killed doing it this way. Let's send six and see what difference does it make. They're scoring every time.
It's tough when you don't practice it at all during the week. You can't just all of a sudden just start throwing guys out there because now the players are not familiar with the game plan. It's different if you go in at halftime and you design a couple blitzes that you want to do that you know the guys are comfortable with doing. But if you're just all of a sudden trying to throw stuff in there midstream, in the third quarter, you're going to make a lot of guys look even worse. I mean, they look bad already, but it's just not something that coaches will do. They're not going to put them in a bad spot, even though they were already in a bad spot.
We talk about adjustments in the game.
Yes.
You just talked about halftime adjustments. And fans, and look, I'm not picking on any fan. I think these are very reasonable questions to ask. You say, are the Jags making the proper adjustments? Because this is happening up until half, and then we come out of halftime, and I think they're outscored 31-3 so far in the third quarter this year, for instance. Gus Bradley addressed that as well on Monday, and he said, look, it's not as simple as it sounds. At halftime, there's very little time. You're really not you can't rip up the game plan and install a new game plan, as you just said.
It's a couple plays. It's a couple different schemes here and there. I know offensively, we would see things from their defense, and we would think, okay, we can put this pass play in and this pass play, this is going to be a shot that we'll try. And then the other time for offense, they're saying, okay, we see what front they're coming out in most of the time, so we're going to think more these runs versus these fronts. On defense, they're just going to see what formations they've come out in and how they've attacked them, and they're going to change the scheme of the defense just by coverage maybe a little bit, and then maybe add a blitz or two here and there. But they're not going to rip things up. They're not going to say, all right, we're going to try a whole new different approach. We're going just straight zero coverage. We're blitzing there. They're not going to do that because guys need to have had some practice with that during the week. Unless it's close to what they've been doing and they're just adjusting it a little bit, that's a different thing. So what I would say going into this week is you are going to watch the film that the other guys have done against Andrew Luck.
Indy, right.
And maybe it's blitzes you haven't done before, or maybe it's blitzes you haven't done since preseason or something like that. Well, you install those now, and you work on them during the week. It may not be the look that we've been accustomed to seeing with more man coverage and just dropping everybody else and rushing four, maybe five. Maybe now you're saying, okay, because I've seen Del Rio do this before. Hey, guys, these are the blitzes that worked the last 2 weeks against Andrew Luck. We're going to install some of these blitzes, and we're going to be a little bit more blitz happy this week. So get ready, bring your lunch pail, because you're coming.
How many adjustments can coaches make and coordinators make in game? You know, on the side, it seems like there's more time, like for Bob Babich to meet with his defensive lineman on the field while the offense is on the field for their three plays. Sorry, I'm kidding. this week, it seemed that way at times. You know what I mean? But yeah. Is there more of an opportunity to make, radical adjustments or something?
It's tough because you have to make sure everybody's on the same page. And if you're trying to, you know, design up new schemes on the sideline when two of the guys are checking the offense out to see what's going on, one guy misses a particular thing that you say, it's tough to try to get all 11 guys to be there. And then their backups, because what if, you know, the wrong person's out there because somebody had to come out for a blow and they didn't get that that update that you did, that change of scheme that you did. And so you don't want to try to put too much on the guys where now they're thinking too much and they're not able to react fast enough.
You see the feeling in this game, you know how the DBs were getting hurt and going in and out. You had all these guys who were not starters playing on the field. In fact, you had Peyton Thompson, who is like a practice squad guy a couple weeks ago as a cornerback, all of a sudden being asked to play safety, and you're really not even sure, does he know all the responsibilities of where he's being asked to play? So that limits you on what kind of defenses you can play as well. If you want to make that shift, it seems like they felt like they kind of were stuck in a position where, okay, it's bad now. It can always be worse if we do this.
You got to keep it not vanilla, but you have to keep it elementary, if you will. When you have new guys coming in, especially guys playing positions they don't normally play, you can't send a corner blitz and expect the safety to come over top of the receiver and shut him down if the quarterback gets the ball out on time. You can't do those kind of things. You can't ask your linebackers to, you know, sugar in the middle, drop out one rush, the defensive end drops out when they're all new guys or they're all backups and they haven't done these things before. A lot of times your backups, your twos and threes are playing scout team. They get a little bit of work. They have to watch as much film as they can, but now they're being told against the best team in the world to go out there and change up what we were doing during the week that you didn't get to practice and try to do this now, and everybody else be on the same page. The tough thing is everybody being on the same page. When you're doing in-game adjustments, you don't want to have 10 guys on the same page and the 11th guy, he's lost.
Right.
And now it looks really bad because you're like, what is this guy doing?
Well, so often we see that big plays happen when one guy is not in his lane on run defense, you know, isn't playing his gap, whatever the case may be. Sometimes that's all it takes to pop that big play against you.
The good teams do the same things. They just do them really well. Seattle is running the same coverages, same little blitzes, but they don't have to do a whole lot because they send their front four, everybody else covered down, and that's all we have to worry about. If all you had to do and know was 1 + 1 = 2, then you're going to be great at it. But when they start throwing a whole bunch of different numbers at you, you're going to not be as great.
Yeah, but you got to have that front four that can actually get pressure
exactly.
on their own without
yeah.
the help. And, that, and that's the key. You got to have the guys, the proper guys in the right spot. And we all know who they're missing on that front line right now. Pretty significant names. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, and Fat Tony here with you. John Osier from Jaguars.com will stop by in a few minutes. We'll get the latest on what Johnny O has to say. Gus Bradley will be talking later on today as we turn the page away from the New England Patriots and on to the next opponent, the Indianapolis Colts for your Jacksonville Jaguars. Fan feedback spotlight today asking you through 3 weeks, give us your most disappointing player, which guy is not living up to your early expectations, and also who is most pleasantly surprising, who's exceeding those early expectations you had for them. You know the Twitter handles. You can also call in at 641-1010 or text on that number to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Worlds collide. John Osher, David Garrard.
Yeah.
Share the studio.
Our worlds collided for about 2 weeks.
Is that right?
Yeah.
This 2 week overlap?
I got here in 2011.
Maybe so that's what happened. Why?
Nah. It's way above my pay grade.
Yeah, your support in the building left you.
That's what it was.
The person of John Osher. How you doing? Everything good?
Good, good.
Midweek, we're all getting past it. And what has been the reaction? What have you gotten? Like, give us a sampling of the feedback you've gotten from Jaguar fans. What kind of questions are they asking you this week?
We're broadcasting during the day, right? Like, I can't.
This is correct. There's not right. You're not. This right. is not after 10 p.m. at no, night. This is not satellite radio.
It's what you would expect, and it usually goes like this: where after a loss, there's about 24 hours of just awfulness. Where I'm the worst guy in the world, and the team's the worst thing in the world.
You are the worst guy in the world for that phone right there.
So you know,
it's his first time.
There's that, but then I think for the most part. Fans, I think, grasped pretty quickly, I'm not talking to everybody, but for the most part, that this was a game against a really good team. Very, very unlikely they were going to win anyway was the perception among the fans. And they do feel like the next couple of weeks are what's going to tell the tale. Now, there are certainly outliers who are furious with the outcome, with the way they looked and all that. But I do think most people are looking at it saying, okay, what happens the next few weeks? How is this team after 5 or 6 weeks? And that's where they'll judge it on. So not as extreme as I would have expected, quite frankly.
But these next 3 weeks, I think this game in particular sets stage for everything. This one game, because if you lose it, you're not mathematically out of anything. You're only a game behind, but you give Indy a little bit of momentum.
Sure.
You let them get that first division victory. If you're able to take the one
yep.
time you have to play them on the road out of the equation, beat them, get to 2-2, knock them down to 1-3. Everyone in the division still has to face the Patriots
yep.
themselves, and that should be a loss for them along the way as well.
One would think.
You would think, right? I mean, just based on who's going to be favored, and that's New England as the Super Bowl champ. So,
for division hopes, this game's key. For how this season's going to play out, for how the quote build is going, for where the team is, I think the next 3 weeks, getting to six games and figuring out sort of where you are with a body of work, I think is the team needs to play well and win a couple the next 3 weeks.
And the reason I, though, think that division hopes are so important is because, and we've talked about
yeah.
this before, I think the wild card is unrealistic. I think it's harder to win the wild card this year in the AFC than it will be to win the AFC South.
You better be pretty good if you're going to need a wild card.
Correct. Yep. And I'm not saying the Jags have to win
the AFC South to satisfy the fans. But one of the big things we all talked about, Tony, or going into this year was, can they be relevant when December rolls around, right?
And I think that's right now it's going to be the division. Yeah,
right.
It's going to be the division. I said it at the beginning of the week, and I'll reiterate it here. The Indianapolis game this week is the most important game under the Caldwell and Bradley regime that they've played to this point. Now, if they lose this game, the Tampa Bay game becomes the most important game that these guys have been involved in, and it's because it's the feeling that everyone in this city had coming into this season, where if your GM is saying that they think the answers are in this locker room now, then they have to start showing up on the field. And this is the opportunity, after being embarrassed two out of the first 3 weeks, really. They played well against Miami, but it's time for them to show some kind of consistency. When you want to go this young, you expect some ups and downs. They need, though, at some point to have a couple, 2 or 3 weeks where you feel good about the direction of this football team, and they need it now.
Like,
it can't be December. It needs to be now for this football team in this build.
And let's not forget, this team is vulnerable right now. Like, we have an opportunity to actually go up with a real chance. Not like in years past where, you know, it was basically going to play in the Patriots up there. We have a real chance to go up here and win this ball game, so let's not go up here and fumble it away. I mean, the opportunity is right here for this team.
I don't know how much you've taken a look at the Colts yet so far this week, and Dave and I and Tony were talking about it earlier. It seems like some of these struggles are real. The protection problems for Andrew Luck are real, and he's just not as sharp this year. Now, it is only three games, and I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because he has a much more successful body of work behind him than some other young quarterbacks out there. But, I mean, how gettable do you think this game is, considering, look, the Jags aren't all that much healthier or won't be in week four than they were in week three?
Right. It's gettable. At the same time, the thing that concerns you is Luck's MO for about the last year and a half has been makes a lot of mistakes, throws a lot of picks, and then somehow is that guy who pulls it out at the end, which is exactly what he did last week.
Yep.
So while they're gettable, that guy's still behind center, and you might get him early. It's still a low margin for error game. I hear what Dave's saying, that it's a chance to go up there and win. But as long as he's on the field, I don't think you look at that position as a weakness for that team, if you follow me. Even if he's not playing as well as he usually does, he makes it gettable, but it's still a tough out. This is still not a game they're favored in.
And I would normally say that is very true, but when I've watched him these last 3 weeks to start the season, he has been not just bad, he's been really, really bad.
Much shakier than normal.
And so that's why I'm saying the opportunity is here. Yes, he will definitely throw you some picks, but he will have, you know, four touchdowns to his three picks. Then the one last touchdown is to win the game. So I understand that, but
you've got to take advantage. I mean to interrupt you, David, but
yeah.
Last year, if you recall, the Jaguars got after Luck early up there. Five sacks, three fumbles, they recovered two of them, and it was 6-3 at half because the offense couldn't score. So if you're assuming that Luck's going to make mistakes, the key this year is you can't kick field goals off those turnovers against this team, because I guess the point I was saying earlier, Luck is going to make some mistakes if you assume that. You also assume he's one of these guys that even if you're down 10, he's going to get him to within three. So you can't leave points on the field against this team when you get your early turnovers. To me, that's the key. Your opportunities, are you kicking field goals or are you sticking in the end zone? Are you throwing it up to A-Rob? He's coming down with it. You can't do what you did against the Patriots, which is with your few opportunities, only get three and then have a turnover. You got to get points out of those. If they had done that last year, they probably went up there.
What is your expectation for Julius Thomas's return? I know Gus will speak later today, and that will be our first opportunity for week four to kind of get a gauge if he's anywhere close to getting back. What do you?
Yeah,
this
is not coming from Gus. This is my.
Sure.
I don't anticipate it this week, just because it would seem it's rare to go from no news, limited, all of a sudden, hey, he's playing. So it sounds like he's going to be limited in practice this week. We certainly hope that changes. But I'm not thinking we see him or Sendarek this week. I'd be surprised.
Obviously, we don't know about Marquise Lee, you know, what the status is going to be with that.
Anybody here have any better idea than I do?
No, we do not. I asked Dave earlier, you know, what was the biggest loss, most one-sided loss that he could remember facing. You talked about that Seattle game a few years ago and 41 to nothing and the approach. Now, you've been around a few different organizations.
You guys came back off that.
Right, they came back and won the next week, right? And they beat St. Louis. Tony had to look it up. I didn't remember who the opponent was, but they, in fact, did come back and get a win. The Jags have shown some resiliency this year, coming off a disappointing performance, coming back the next week, getting a win. But more, you've been around a couple of teams, several different head coaches. Have there been different philosophies that you've seen from your vantage point on how they approach dealing with something like that?
Yeah.
You have to address it, but you also don't want to dwell on it too much, I would imagine.
Well, the biggest example, and fans probably know where I'm going with this, you know, the game that David's so familiar with, 44-17, I'm covering the Colts, and, you know, Jaguars run all over them that day. Everybody remembers that game. And the Colts, as you recall, were a very good team that year. But they were absolutely counted out after that game. It was over. They couldn't stop the run.
Yep.
Now, this is a different – I can only talk to the specific dynamic there. Tony Dungy's approach was always, if you have a brutal game, if you can't figure it out, go simpler. Simplify everything. Get them back to where you can play as fast as possible. Sort of get back to basics. And that's what they did, and they wound up getting Bob Sanders back. They stopped the run. They won the Super Bowl. That's a different dynamic because you had a franchise quarterback there where you could build that around and come back and have confidence. But I think that's what you do. I don't think you go around changing things after a big loss because then all of a sudden, and now you're reteaching something and you're telling your players that what we had absolutely doesn't work and now we're going to reinvent the wheel and go forward in 3 days. Dave, I don't think that's really what players respond to for the most part.
Wholesale change. Yeah, you're absolutely right. A lot of times they do go back to the drawing board and say, let's just simplify things. Maybe we're putting too much on you guys' plate, and we need to just go back to the basics. This week we're going back to the basics. So you guys
figure out
go
what
out
you do
there
well.
And play fast. We don't want you thinking, and a lot of times they think, maybe we've given you too much, and so you're not able to react and play natural and be the athlete that you are. The thing that I was saying about, maybe adding some more blitzes to your plate for Andrew Luck is because that's what's been working in the last few weeks on him, and so let's see what teams have done. I'm not saying we blitz every play,
right?
But let's add some of these blitzes. Now, if it's real out of the norm and it's not something that we've ever done before, if we can't go back to preseason and watch any of the things that we've done blitz-wise, then maybe you don't do it. And you know, Gus, he might not be a blitzing guy. I just know when you have to adjust sometimes, you have to be able to throw blitzes in. Blitzes are a part of our game, so you should be able to add some of these blitzes.
I'll clarify that. I'm not saying that they're going to come out and run the exact same game plan against New England defensively. I definitely think they'll pressure more. I think they'll be closer to the receivers this week. I don't see them taking a passive approach. I'm not saying to stick with that. It's just I don't think you go 3-4. I don't think all of a sudden you turn yourself into a zone blitz team because this didn't work the other day. But I think David's right. I think you got to pressure our quarterbacks.
You got to have confidence that your guys in the secondary can handle it, too. I mean, it's going to depend on who's available to them this week.
And that was certainly an issue at safety in the second half last week. And that's what Gus clarified. In retrospect, he probably would have pressed more with the secondary early. I don't know that once their safeties got hurt and you were down to 4 and essentially 5 with a practice squad guy who was a nickel, I don't know that they would have ever felt comfortable playing a lot of exotic press coverage with those kind of safeties in the back. I think it just seemed like a very certain death to them.
The thing is, how are you going to die slow? Are you going to allow these guys that, you know, have very little knowledge in the back end to just play coverage and they just pick you apart the whole time? Or do you take some chances? Do you send some guys, ask them to, you know? So
I think you reach a point where you say, you know what, I'm tired of getting just sliced.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I think if they expect those guys to play and you've got a week to prepare them, I think there is a different approach.
All right, Johnny O, Jaguars.com Live, what do you have coming up?
.com Live at 11:45, and I'll be running down after I talk to Shadrick to listen to Blake. And Shadrick will... Dan Scuda will have the pleasure of spending some time with J.P. Shadrick.
Oh, fantastic.
Which, as you know, Mike, is a big
It's really what I center my life around on a weekly basis. Those Sunday marathons with JP right here in this very studio. All right, Johnny O, check him out on Twitter, at John Osier, and, of course, on the digital pages of Jaguars.com. Thank you, man.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
There he goes with David Grar. With that, Tony, we'll be back in a moment with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday here at Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, September 30th. On this date in 1939, it was the first televised college football game. East Carolina. No, I'm kidding. Who's paying attention?
What are we talking about?
Fordham versus Waynesburg in New York City.
That was the first what now?
First televised college football game back in 1939.
Oh, how far we've
Thank
come.
Thank you, Vladimir Zworkin. 1973, San Diego quarterback. That's right, I said San Diego quarterback Johnny Unitas became the first player to top 40,000 yards passing when he connected with Mike Garrett on a 30-yard completion against Cincinnati. What is Favre over 70,000, right?
I think so, yeah.
Favre, Manning, both over 70,000. Is that right?
Let me check.
This is one you would have thought I would have looked up this, but I looked up another list today. Famous birthdays for the state. 1972, Jamal Anderson, the former Falcon running back.
Dirty Birds.
Jamal Anderson of the Dirty Birds, that's correct, had over 1,800 yards that season where he had over 400 carries. He had 410 carries in 1998 when Atlanta went to the Super Bowl that year, beat Minnesota in the playoffs. Second most all-time. Five guys have had 400 or more carries in a single season. Eddie George had 403 in 2000. Eric Dickerson, who, by the way, Eric Dickerson had, I don't know, like six 350 carry seasons. Didn't seem to slow him down.
Not at all.
A whole lot. Of course, he was pretty damn good. James Wilder for the Bucks back in 1984 had 407. Anderson with his 410. And then Larry Johnson. They ran the legs off of him. 416 carries for the Chiefs.
They did. He was never
I remember that.
He was not the same after that. And a lot of people thought, hey, watch out for DeMarco Murray. I know you wanted him here. And look, it could be the O-line. It could be the play calling right now. You look at the returns that DeMarco Murray and Ndamukong Suh have given to the teams that signed him in free agency, and you could say thank you for not signing them, right? I mean, it's not always about splashing the most cash around. Now, a lot of season left to play for both of those guys so they could get it turned around as well. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located here on Gate Parkway. Call 620-9225. A certified Invisalign provider, a provider of the Somnomed Snore Guard as well, and you can get a 10% discount on all first-time customer initial visits. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
We do have a Julius Thomas update coming up here in just a minute. For those who have seen the report on Bleacher Report and from the Indy Star here this morning, we'll give you the latest on that here in just a moment. But first, the drive around the NFL. The NFL has appealed Judge Berman's decision to overturn the suspension of Tom Brady to the U.S. Court of Appeals. The case will not be heard until at least February of next year. So any rumors you've heard about Tom Brady still potentially facing that four-game suspension this season are just as absurd as some Patriots fans' complaints that the NFL intentionally put the Pats by in week four to slow down the early momentum of their football team. Golden Tate joins the early season refrain from offensive players around the league that are saying opposing teams know their plays and are calling them out before they are run. Tate said as much on his weekly interview with 105.1 in Detroit yesterday. Philadelphia said it a couple weeks ago about the Dallas game, that they were yelling the plays from the sideline. I saw Ryan Clark this morning on Mike and Mike, the former Steelers and Washington safety, and he said he played with Antonio Pierce in Washington. And there were times where Pierce would call out the plays for 70-75% of the opposing plays before it snapped. And he'd just be yelling at the guys. He'd be, draw, draw, draw. And he said there were times where Sean Taylor would just abandon his assignment and blitz because Antonio Pierce was right so much at the time. He's like, this isn't new. I don't know why all of a sudden players are complaining about defensive players calling out plays.
You ever have a game like that where you guys come back to the huddle and these guys know everything that's coming?
Well, yeah, they go off of your looks, you know, and so they're basically guessing. You have about three plays that you run out of this look right here, so I'm going to call out the one that you run the most out of this look, and so... And sometimes you're like, oh my gosh,
how does that feel when you're under center?
No, what we're doing.
And the play clock is ticking down, and you're like, they're loading. I mean, you know, sometimes you call a timeout. Obviously, I would think in that situation. But how? I mean, what is that? What's going through your mind?
Well, a lot of times we're like, well, stop us. You know, sometimes you do. Sometimes they will call out the right play, but you still got to stop us. And sometimes we make a great play. Sometimes they make a great play. And a lot of times we know what they're running. I mean, we know what blitz you're about to send right here. We watched you on film. And so it is a chess match, and it does feel weird when they call out some of your plays. They don't call out, you know, the plays the whole game. But there are times when they're calling out the play, and you're like, how in the world
right. Do
you know we're running? Because we got a few different looks that we're going to, you know, a few different plays that we're going to run out of this look. But right now, you just called out the exact play we're running, and there's nobody on the sideline that's giving them the play. They've watched film.
Film study.
Yeah, they just film study. And there's some really good players that have that knack to be able to watch film study and recall exactly what you're going to do.
Every week, the head coach of each football team in the National Football League does a press conference, a phone conference,
yeah,
with the media from the opposing city so they can write their stories, whatever, get some quotes. Gus Bradley just completed his with the Indianapolis media today, Tony. So take us step by step what occurred from there.
Well, Zach Kiefer, who covers the Colts for the Indy Star up there, I heard the audio a few moments ago, but he basically asked a question about Julius Thomas and his potential return for this week, and he was asking a question about him returning on Sunday. Bradley responded to the question like he was returning to practice, is how Bradley responded, but Kiefer tweeted out, Jags coach Gus Bradley said this morning he expects tight end Julius Thomas to play Sunday versus the Colts. He had 3 touchdowns versus Indy in a game last year when he was with Denver, so obviously they don't want to see Julius Thomas this week. Bleacher Report picked up on it. So we had a couple people tweeting in, texting in, saying, have you seen this report on Julius Thomas? I went and talked to one of our guys inside the building here and asked what's going on with this Bradley Thomas thing, and he played the audio for me. And it's clearly Bradley is saying Julius is supposed to be back at practice today for this Jaguars team. He's supposed to be limited in practice today. They're going to see how he feels as we get towards the end of the week. He may play Sunday. He may not. There's no clear indication that he will or won't play. And since then, Zach Kiefer for the Indy Star has actually deleted that tweet. So apparently someone in the building talked to him as well. But
right.
Julius Thomas expected back at practice this week, and it's unclear whether or not he's going to be able to play this weekend up in Indianapolis.
But nobody's, at this point, that's not the expectation that he'll be able to play.
No.
Right? The safer expectation is that he's going to be out for another week. And to be very clear, because people hear a snippet of something when they tune in, the Indy reporter was incorrect based on what he was reporting Gus Bradley said. Gus Bradley was basically saying a hopeful return to practice,
yeah,
this
week
on a somewhat limited basis.
Deleted what he tweeted.
Right. But I just, you know, if somebody tuned in right at that moment, they're going to hear half of what we said, and heck, they may be tuning in right at this moment, right this second. Do I need to say it again, Dave? It's all right. It's done. I hope you all caught the Julius Thomas update right there. That one guy who just tuned in is like, what? What? What is that all about? All right, 641-1010 is the number. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll come back and see what Dave thinks, which of these Jags need to get going, who can get going a little bit, and maybe some things to look for when Jacksonville takes on Indianapolis this Sunday afternoon. With David Garrard, with Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing concerns in your home, for your place of business, residential, commercial, even industrial plumbing, septic systems, you name it. Metro Rooter, the call to make. Same day service that includes the weekend. Why are they the call to make? They've got the right people with the right equipment. They've been serving Jacksonville since 1978 and the surrounding area as well. Anytime I have a plumbing issue with my house, Metro Rooter is the call I make. You can visit them at MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Wednesday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Back live at EverBank in a moment with David Garrard and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, got this one in on Twitter, at MD underscore 1010XL, at David Garrard 9, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Jaguars Today rolling on. Michael, I'm going to go with Regina. Could be Regina. I don't know. He said, what are the chances the Jags are being coy about Thomas's health to not tip their hand that he's coming back this week? Anything's possible. They're pretty straightforward, I found, you know, with expectations of guys coming back. I don't think he's playing this week, but look, I mean, Gus said, hey, he thinks he's going to be back at a limited basis on practice. I don't know if that's being coy or not. I think that's pretty accurate. And, you know, they're going to know. The Colts are going to read the practice report. They're going to probably, you know, they'll follow along and have a pretty good idea. I don't think he's going to play this week, but is it possible he's listed as questionable and at least leaves that up until 90 minutes prior to kickoff, Dave? Yeah, why not, right?
I would think so. I would do that just because you make them have to prepare for him and he doesn't play, so now they spend all this time working on him and thinking about him and having to worry about him, and it maybe just throws them off just a little bit. So teams do this kind of stuff all the time. They never want you to talk about your injury. They never want you to, you know, say if you're playing, if you're not playing, just because they always want to you know, have the other team question and then have to work on things in case you are there or in case you're not there. So it just makes them have to do more work.
All right, you're the Jags, right? They hire you, David Grohl. We need a special consultant coming in this week and help us devise the game plan offensively to take on this Colts team, because we focused on how shaky that the offense has been. The defense has been okay and been spectacular at times. Last week, not really. I mean, 33 points to the Tennessee Titans I don't think is that good. And as we said, the Jets ended up putting up 31 when it was all said and done. So how do you attack them this week if you're the Jags?
Well, I still think you have to get the run game going. I know people don't like to always hear that, but you really do. And it's the way that you go about getting the run game going, because I think that you can throw screens to the running backs to get them going. I'm not sure how many screens we've thrown to Yeldon and those guys. Also, the running game is throwing the ball out there like they did to Randall Cobb. You know, it's a one-yard throw with guys blocking, and he makes some plays. I think we at least have A-Rob that we can throw the ball to like that, and he go down there and make some plays. He can get 5 or 6 yards, because those are the kind of plays that just chip away at a team. That's what Brady and those guys do all the time. Peyton does it all the time. It's a part of the run game. But I think we have to find a way to get Yeldon off. I think we have to find a way to get the ball in his hand and have him make positive plays for us, because we're going to need that throughout the season, but we're definitely going to need that in this game this weekend.
All right, Blake Bortles, you've been in his position, young quarterback, playing football in the National Football League. You're going to have your ups and downs, and that's one thing that Dave Caldwell talked to Tony and I about. It's, you know, we think Blake's going to be a good player. The question is, how consistent can he be this year? How many of those good Blake games are you going to get versus the dips that I thought, you know, whatever the numbers say, watch the game. I don't think he played very well in week three. Although, you know, you look at what he's on pace. Tony, what was the yardage he's on pace to throw?
I heard
apart?
Those numbers.
27 and 16 touchdown and interception.
Yeah,
ratio.
It was like 30. It was close to 3,700.
Right. I mean, those final numbers sound good. You know, but in the context of a game-by-game situation, not necessarily good every week, even if you're producing numbers that are going to add up to that. What do you do if you're counseling Blake this week? Or, you know, maybe you're going to tell me that you don't need all these guys in his ear. He knows what he needs to do. How do you bounce back if you're Blake Bortles?
Well, I would just tell him to continue to play his game. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have situations you put yourself in, you put the team in. But really, it always comes down to how you finish the ball game. You know, even though you throw an interception, it might be an ugly interception. Do you go down and drive and score a touchdown on the next series? You know, those are the things that you have to be able to forget what you just did and go out there and make the plays necessary, because that's honestly what Andrew Luck did last week. I mean, he was god-awful throughout the whole game and then finally just kind of kept going, just kept, you know, pecking away there in the second half, and winded up winning the ball game. And that's what people want. They don't care that you make a I mean, they care, but they don't care that you make a bunch of mistakes early. They want to see you find a way to win so they can say, our quarterback always finds a way to win. That's all people care about. Do you get us W's? And he has to be able to figure those things out, because he's going to make bad plays. He's young. He's going to make those plays that you're just shaking your head. But then you say, oh, man, but, man, he found a way to win. He always finds a way to win. He always is keeping our team in it. You know, you want to be that reason why the team is always in it. You want to be the reason that the team has a chance to win. And so he just has to get to that point where people can say that about him.
It's interesting that people focus on fourth quarter comebacks as a big statistic, right? We've all heard it. Who are the greatest, you know, John Elway, Joe Montana, all these guys, all these fourth quarter comebacks. Guess who's not going to have a lot of those this year? Tom Brady's not going to have a lot of fourth quarter comebacks, right? Isn't it funny how we focus on one thing? And look, I get it. If you're in a position where, and sometimes through no fault of your own, if you're trailing in the fourth quarter, that's what we're talking about here. Can you come through regardless of what transpired up until that point in that game and perform at the most crucial moments, because they're more crucial now because time is running out and you have less opportunity left in this contest. So I do understand why they do it.
Most NFL games come down to the last drive. Usually they come down to the last drive. Now you have some.
It was a good blowout week.
You have some teams that are just really good. I mean, the Packers, they did it. The Patriots did it. You're going to have some teams that usually do that, but most of the time, when you're looking around a league, it's coming down to that last drive, or at least the last two drives.
At least get your hands on the ball in the fourth quarter within a score, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and that is certainly...
Be there with a chance to win the ball game.
Yeah. Blake, week one, threw the pick six, and the Jags offense really shut down after that point in time. He threw the interception late in the first half in this one. And they went on to score 14 second half points, but we talked about it prior to the broadcast. It was really, there's no one play that lost them the game, but that was the most crucial kind of turning point of the game. How do you counsel a young quarterback to be able to put that one, no matter how bad it is, and a pick six is about as bad as it can get. It's an instant touchdown for the other team when you had the ball. How do you get beyond letting that one disastrous play ruin you for the next drive, the next quarter, the next half, whatever?
It can be tough. A lot of times it's just your mental makeup. You know, do you have the ability to just forget and move on? When you're young, you worry about a lot of things. You worry about what people are saying, what your teammates are saying, you know, how everybody thinks about you. When you get older and you've been there and you've done that, you're just like, I don't care. Here we go again. Let's go out here and drive down and score a touchdown. It's tough when you're really young to just forget it and just say, you know what, just move on. I'm just going to keep going down here and firing away. He has that ability. I've seen him do it before. The thing that he has to do is he has to put those games together where he's not making those mistakes. He's not making those costly turnovers because he's having to forget too many times. And so he's going into the game thinking, okay, don't make that big costly turnover. Don't make that big mistake, because, I mean, that can happen to any quarterback at any point. But when you go into the game faking it already, you know, I'm not saying he's doing that, but usually young quarterbacks go in with that kind of mindset, you know, don't make the mistake, you know, just play within yourself, play within the team. Those things are true, but you want to be able to go into the game thinking, let's go make some plays. You know, hey, Rob, I'm going to throw the ball up to you. I want to see you come down it. I want to see you dance in the end zone. Let's go.
Which it seems to be their approach against Miami, right? They just came out and they said, look, double covered, fine, go make a play. You know, tight covered, single covered, I'm still going to give you the opportunity to go make a play. I thought they took some shots in this New England game. Maybe they were ill-advised once at certain times, but I didn't think they were not aggressive, but they just have to be more efficient while they're doing it at the same time.
And I'm not saying he's not aggressive, because he still is trying to make these plays. The one in Mercedes, he was trying to make the play. It was a very poor throw, but he was throwing the ball down the field. He's not making the plays that he should be making at the times when the team needs him. I mean, this is the last drive right before the half. Let's go down here and at least walk away with 3 points. You know, the score is 13-3, so let's at least come away with some points before the half so we can feel good, because they're coming back out and they're getting the ball again. We don't want to be too far behind, but when we go down and throw this interception, they come back and score off of that turnover, and then they get the ball back at the end of the at the beginning of the second half, and then they go down and score again. Now you just put your, it just starts to add up too fast. And for a team like the Patriots, it's tough to go toe to toe with them, but you have to be able to answer a lot of their touchdowns, a lot of their points. And when you're giving the ball back to them, you know, without scoring anything, you're killing yourself. And so he just has to understand, I have to not be the reason why we're not able to stay in this ball game. I want to be the reason why we are in the ball game, and that kind of mentality is always, you know, tough for some young guys to be able to understand that.
On the Boston's Restaurant Sports Bar text line coming in about 15 minutes ago, this one said, Peter King said on Colin Cowherd's show yesterday, I didn't realize that was still a thing, but Colin Cowherd's show, that one of the most surprising things of the season so far in Peter King's eyes is how far the Jags still have to go. As you watch them after 3 weeks, and we've watched them, you know, the philosophy of building young, going through the draft and pulling all the pieces together, understanding the circumstances with the injuries and everything that goes into it. You know all these different variables. Are you surprised when you just watch it and say, wow, this is not where I thought the team would be? And not that you expect them to beat the Patriots,
yeah,
or, but just through three games as a whole, what is your reaction overall?
You know what? I was listening to you guys last week, and I heard Tony say after the Miami game, man, this actually felt like a real NFL game. Two teams battling, both teams making some mistakes, both teams making plays down to the wire, and we came out with the win. It really felt like we actually took a step forward in feeling like a real NFL team and a real NFL game. And then we played this last weekend, and it just felt like we took a step back. It felt like our guys not just couldn't match up with the Patriots, but shouldn't have even been on the field with the Patriots. And that's that. You can't be there in the NFL. You should be able to go out there and at least make it interesting. Your fans shouldn't be turning the game off, you know, after the first drive into the third quarter. They shouldn't be trying to see if they need to go cut the grass or something while the game's going on. They should always feel like, okay, we're down two scores here, but we still have a chance. You know, the guys are still moving the ball. We've just made some mistakes on our own end. It never felt like... Now, I will take that back. The first half, I thought, okay, we're not playing terrible. We're not playing great. We're hanging around. We got to put some points on the board. But then the interception happened, and it just felt like everything changed. You can't have that. Even though you throw the interception, the whole game should not feel like it changes, because that's still in the first half. You still should be able to come out, get them off the field on their first drive. Maybe they go three and out. I know that's, you know, a little almost impossible.
Even if
but
they don't, even if they go down and kick a field goal,
yeah,
right. I mean, you got to be thinking, all right, we may not stop it. Can we slow them enough? If we score a touchdown, it's 13-10. If we, you know, if we time it out right, maybe they get the ball back less than 30 seconds. It goes in the half, 13-10. So they get the ball to start the second half. Hold them to no more than a field goal. You're within a score with the ball in your hands in the second half. And I realize you can't bleed the clock from that point,
yeah,
but you're in it trading punches a little bit, right?
You can't have the other offense never punt the ball. You know, I remember playing in a game.
I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, I remember playing in a game, and I believe it was Polish who was our punter. And he said, Dave, you know, thanks a lot today, but you guys didn't let me punt one time. You know, I think maybe we scored a bunch of times, and then I think we had a turnover. But he said, you know, this is the first time I've been in a football game since I was in Pop Warner, where I never punted the ball the whole game. You know, I said, you're welcome, you know, anytime.
Yeah, right.
You know, because you, I mean, honestly, you want to go out there and you want to put points on the board every time, but you can never have another team do that to you. I mean, that just, you talk about something that just demoralizes you, and and that does. Those are the things that, you know, can crush a team in that game. And so that's what happened. But luckily, there's plenty of games left. There's an opportunity to go out this week. A very good chance, in my mind, to go get a win.
All right, we'll find out if they can do just that. We've got more program to go here on Jaguars Today with your weekly injury report coming up from Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. David Garrard is here with us, Fat Tony as well. We'll get to the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you through three games, which Jaguars play has disappointed you the most and which one has been the most pleasantly surprising for you as well. Mike Dempsey, David Garrard, Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
All right, going to get a quick look at your weekly injury report brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute. In for Dr. Stephen Lucy, Dr. John Von Thrawn, one of 31 physicians at Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the exclusive sports medicine providers of your Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Dr. Von Thrawn, how are you?
Doing well. Nice to be here.
Is he on over there, Tony? He doesn't sound like you. We got you, Tyler. He's coming. It's going to be a big, grand entrance. Was he on? Try it now. How you doing?
Doing well.
You sound so much better. You sound a little under the weather about
he did.
15 seconds ago right there. Doc, we were just talking here a minute ago as you popped into the studio before the segment. Hamstring injuries, funny breed, right? I mean, are they almost unique in their way you have to deal with them from an NFL perspective in that it's just simply one of the most recurring injuries if you don't really completely let it heal?
Exactly. It's a really difficult injury to overcome, especially in season. Typically with a hamstring injury, if you really want it to completely heal, it takes 6 weeks of total rest, and that's really not an option for most NFL players.
It's not a luxury most teams have, right, to keep guys on the active 53 if they know they're going to be out for a month and a half.
Exactly. And if you try to go back before it's completely healed, it's a really higher risk to retweak it and just create a, you know, nagging injury for the whole season.
What is the cause? Like, I've had people, you know, and fans are fans, and they're going to ask the kind of questions they ask. And one of the things they ask is when they see a lot of guys out with soft tissue injuries, what's the training staff doing or what are they not doing? Is it just one of those things that you could prepare 100 guys equally, and you just never know. You can't really predict which ones are going to come down with these kind of injuries.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Everybody's body mechanics are different. Their, you know, positions are different. What they're doing as far as the burst of speeds and lunging and things like that, they just put different stresses on their body depending on what position and so forth.
It looked like Ben Roethlisberger might have had significantly more to deal with than he has to deal with. Turns out he has a sprained medial collateral ligament. Anytime you see a hit to the knee, you think, torn ACL, here comes the cart, season's over with for Roethlisberger. I think he felt that way looking at his reaction as he got rolled into the locker room. But tell us, you know, about the medial collateral ligament. What is the typical timetable? Obviously, you haven't looked at Ben's knee, but, you know, what is he facing in terms of getting back on the field?
Well, the medial collateral ligament is a ligament on the inside part of the knee and prevents your knee from going out to the side. I don't know if you saw the tape, but Ben's knee definitely went in a direction you wouldn't expect a knee to go to. And typically these take anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks to heal for a sprain. If it's completely torn, you're looking at more like 2 to 3 months. What I've heard is that he's going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks, so it's probably just a sprain, maybe a little partial tear, and they'll brace him up and hopefully he'll be able to get back in 4 to 6 weeks.
If it's completely torn, like an ACL, you go in and you repair the ACL. If an MCL is completely torn, do you do the same thing?
No, for an isolated MCL tear, it does not require surgery. You would just brace them and just let it heal on its own. They usually heal down well.
And so when you say heal on its own, like I'm envisioning in my head, you've got this ligament that is torn in half. It will heal back together on its own. I mean, you don't, without you, I would think that the ends of the ligament will kind of pull away from each other, but you will heal up fine if you completely tear it, if you give it enough time.
Yes, it will, and it kind of scars down and regenerates the ligament, yes.
All right, so I guess for Pittsburgh, back, 5 or 6 weeks, a lot better timetable than what we're looking at. No inside scoop for you with Julius Thomas. You're in the dark with the rest of us.
Absolutely.
On a timetable to return. Gus said earlier today, hopeful to get in some limited practice this week. So that would be the march we're on. Is this team this year, we look at a lot of guys who we consider front-end players for the Jacksonville Jaguars, starting-type guys that have been unavailable due to a variety of injuries. Julius Thomas, for instance, is just a freak thing. Guy gets hit, he gets flipped upside down. But maybe are we focusing on it more because it is a rash of starting-caliber guys on Jacksonville, or is this a typical year in terms of the volume of injuries, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it seems like it's a higher volume.
Is it a higher volume?
It seems that way. And if you look
for this team in particular, or around the National Football League as a whole?
Well, I think for this team in particular, I mean, it seems like when you look at the roster, it's like half the team is injured, and it's only the third, fourth game
right.
of the year. And you know, it's not unusual to see maybe that later in the year, but this early in the season to have that many guys out, and as you said, key guys out, is unfortunate, I guess you could describe.
You hate that when guys' bodies have dictated who your inactives are, right? There's no decision making. Right. These guys simply can't play. And when you start creeping into the active game day roster of guys that may not be available as well, you know it's been a bit of an epidemic.
Right. You know, every team has to deal with injuries, but it seems like it's a little worse right now for the Jaguars.
Well, let's get them healthy, Doc. Let's get them back out there as quickly as possible and tell them to stop getting hurt for us. Dr. John Von Thrawn here with us as we wrap up. It's the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute Injury Report. Every week, Dr. Von Thrawn, one of 31 physicians at JOI, the exclusive sports medicine providers of the Jacksonville Jaguars. JOI is Jacksonville's Orthopedic Institute. Thanks, Doc. Good to see you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
There you go. And let's keep them healthy. And let's talk about how it's an amazing rash of health that this team is facing going into week five in the National Football League. All right. There he goes, Dr. Von Thrawn. David Garrard, Fat Tony here with me as we get ready to wrap up Jaguars today coming down the home stretch. Tony, fan feedback spotlight today asking people who was the most disappointing player through 3 weeks and whose performance has most pleasantly surprised you. What kind of feedback did we get?
Here's what we got from Stoffelis Prime over there in the UK. Surprise, Yeldon, disappointment, Allen Robinson, or Blake. I want to, and he spelled it the way the Irish say it, win now. Hashtag radio edit. It was a word I'm not allowed to say on the radio, but it's written the way the Irish say it. From Andy, most surprising puzz, interception, pass breakup tackles, disappointing House went on the field. From Daniel, disappointing is Marquise Lee because he's never healthy. Surprise is Dan Scuda. From Isaiah, most impressive Blake Bortles, disappointing TJ Yeldon. From Adam, disappointed in Colvin because he hasn't shown up at all. Surprisingly, the kicker has exceeded my expectations. From Eric, Bortles is disappointed the most. Need to see more from him. Linebacker Telvin Smith has impressed the most. From Love Hyphen, most disappointing, Lady Luck. Hashtag to hell with the injury bug. Most pleasant surprise, Myers. Hashtag kid feeds me subs. From Irish Jaguar, I finally feel up to facing more Jags talk after Sunday. Sergio has been better than expected. Julius Thomas on the trainer's table has been a huge disappointment so far. And from King Dusty, disappointing albino tiger. Where is he? Surprise, Parnell. He is nasty, most consistent.
Yeah, a guy like Julius Thomas, look, I'm disappointed that we haven't been able to see him. I'm not disappointed in Julius Thomas. You know what I mean? I mean, that's just a freakish kind of situation for him. A couple on Facebook here, Dave, from Daniel Stewart. I've actually been a little disappointed in Rashad Green with his drops, but pleasantly surprised by Jared Odrick. I think he's performing better than his perceived value so far. Hashtag Jaguars today. Chad Cox said, I'm most disappointed in the offensive line's run blocking, mostly Jokel. I'm most surprised by Allen Robinson. I thought he would be good, but not so good to where Bortles throws to him primarily. I figured Bortles would spread the ball around more. I'm a little disappointed in Bortles, but it's still too early. Damon said, most disappointing to this point, Mercedes Lewis and Marquise Lee. Most surprising, Scuda and Odrick. And he's still going hashtag 10-6 wild card. 10-6 will win the division this year, I think. Put it this way, 10-6 has, I think, as good a chance, if not better, to win the division as it does to get a wild card. And then finally, Josh Wiggins said, Allen Hurns quietly having a very good season. Maybe the first Jaguar receiver in a while to get 1,000 yards if he keeps the pace up. Disappointed with Bortles. You see production from his fellow rookie quarterbacks from last year's draft and also this year's draft. We still have not seen a, quote, breakout game for him. Have we seen a breakout game I think when we want something to happen, Dave, and we get a glimpse of it, sometimes maybe we pump it up a little too much. Some people accuse us of doing that in week two. And I think what happened was you contrast it with the way they played in week one. He comes back in week two, no interceptions. You have the fourth quarter comeback that you're talking about, getting it done when it's most important. Is that What would constitute a breakout game, I guess, for Blake Bortles?
You know, I felt like that could have probably been a breakout game, but I want a breakout run. I want to see not a run.
String of games.
A string of games, yeah. I want to see that consistency go, you know, for 3, 4, 5 weeks where he's just playing really good. And he doesn't have to be playing out of his mind. He can have the same Miami game for that string, and that will give a lot of the fans that confidence that they have in him already, but that is starting to wane some.
An expectation that you're going to get that.
Yeah,
the
because
next time
we
up.
Know you're young. We know that, you know, you don't have all your weapons and everybody out there, but still, we want to be able to really just count on you and believe in you wholeheartedly. But we need a string of games. We don't need, you know, just one game and then a couple games that are bad and then another. So we need some more consistency from them.
All right. You know what could happen with some of these guys who are banged up? They should just head over to Retro Fitness and get
absolutely
right. Am I right? Tell us what's going on at Retro Fitness right now.
You know, one of the nicest new gyms in town. I know I'm a little biased saying that, but I really believe that
the nicest.
Yeah, yes. The nicest gym in town. Great cardio machines. All of our cardio machines have TVs on them. We have great group classes. You can come in for yoga, spin, Pilates, all those different type of classes, Zumba. And, you know, so if you don't like that, if you want to just get your cardio work in, we have a cardio theater, you know, so you can sit there and watch a movie and time just flies by when you're on a treadmill or an elliptical. So you can come and check us out, Bay Meadows and Southside. Or you can come to Atlantic Boulevard in San Pablo. It's called the Harbor Village Shopping Center. Both gyms are the nicest gyms in town.
Like don't be a couch potato. Be an elliptical potato,
there
right?
You go.
Or a treadmill potato, or whatever the case may
and
be.
And this is the time of the season to definitely get in, you know, because especially in October right now, we have no enrollment fees. And, you know, we're heading to Halloween, then Thanksgiving, then Christmas, you know, so... for me, I know I have to get in there as much as possible.
All right, Retro Fitness Jacks on the web, retrofitnessjacks.com, if you want to find out more information for David Garrard's two locations in town with Retro Fitness. What do you think? Prediction for you? Can they get it done? Will they get it done?
You know, I see this as being a great chance for them to win, but I got to see more. You know, I got to see something that can allow me to pick them. I think this is a great opportunity. So I'm
prove us wrong, right?
Yeah, please prove us wrong. I mean, I want to pick you. I want to ride with you guys, season ticket holder, but you got to give us something.
Yeah, and look, there are plenty of people, I think, that will pick them to win this week. Prove us right, wrong, doesn't matter. Just win. Doesn't matter.
Just win, baby.
Just win, baby. Dave, good to see you, bud.
Thanks, man.
Thanks for making it in. David Garrard here today. Ryan O'Howard tomorrow. Mm-hmm. We'll have Tom McManus in on the first hour with us on Friday.
I'm sure he's going to be a ray of sunshine.
Oh, he always is.
After that game against New England.
Tweet him up at Meathead55.
Talk about a guy who carries it, man.
You think?
Yes.
Tommy Mack, he'll be joining us. So, Halloran tomorrow. We'll also check in with the local indie media tomorrow to find out what the hell's going on with Andrew Luck and company, and can we keep it going for at least one more week this season. That'll do it for us today. Thanks to Metro Rooter for all-size plumbing jobs in-home, at your business, industrial plumbing, you name it. Metro Rooter's got the solution for you. Go to MetroRooter.com or call 695-1911, 695-1911 for Metro Rooter, our Friday sponsor on Jaguars Today. For Fat Tony, for David Garrard, for Dr. Von Thrawn, for John Osier, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and for Willie down the street. I don't know who that is. I'm Mike Dempsey. That does it for us. I just felt like I'd throw one more name in, Tony. Willie down the street is now on the program. XL Primetime coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.